What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Mets Pod live from Citi Field. I'm Connor Rogers, joined as always by my co-host Joe DeMeo. Joe, we have been talking about this for a long time, and finally we are here. How are we feeling?
We're feeling great. Beautiful day out here at Citi Field. Mets back from the, I mean, you're going to tell me that was a 10-game road trip. I'm not going to believe you. It felt like it was a 20-game road trip. But they're back here home, and yeah, just a great night for Mets baseball.
Yeah, and we're going to start with that. We're going to talk about that road trip. But of course, a reminder to subscribe to the Mets Pod. You can get your Mets Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch on SMY's YouTube, and as most of you are right now, watching on SMY's social media. So the West Coast trip. Listen, we talked about this for a long time. The doom and gloom West Coast trip. Some teams, obviously, in the division getting hot. The Mets staring down, looking at the Padres, of course, the Dodgers, the Angels. Yeah, no, we were a little more confident against them. But, Joe, at the end of the day, what did we say over and over again? Tread water. Keep your head above water. What did they do? 500 baseball.
It's what good teams do. Good teams, when they face other good teams, you hold serve, and the Mets did the definition of holding serve, doing a 500 West Coast trip. Started, you know, obviously losing the first two to the Dodgers and going in against their two best pitchers.
Didn't look great.
Yeah, didn't look great, but they turned it on. They obviously lost two or three from San Diego, and then the Angels were a team going in we figured was going to be maybe a little more of a challenge than they actually were, and the Mets take two out of three there. But, I mean, you consider that a successful road trip, and now they come back home, and, you know, the schedule, not easy, but it does soften a tiny bit here.
And I think starting with the Dodgers series, it was kind of the story of, it's early, but the story of this Mets team so far, like you said, they lose the first two games. The little weird start, Lindor with the finger in the hotel injury, and everybody's like, is this going to be a thing? Is this going to be serious? And the Mets have been battling through some key injuries this year. Obviously, he played after missing one game, but they did lose those first two games. And like you said, Joe, that was against the weaker part of their rotation. And then they're looking at Walker Buehler. For whatever reason, they find success against Walker Buehler.
Pete Alonso loves facing Walker Buehler.
Pete Alonso absolutely loves hitting at the Dodgers ballpark. Very strange, and we have a lot to say about Pete on this show. But this is the Mets in a hole. Whenever you think that they're going to be in trouble this year, when they don't ever really lose more than two games at a time, they climb out of it over and over again. And I think that's kind of an identity, not just with the veteran players, but something that we've talked about with multiple guests we've had on, whether it's Andy Martino, Keith Hernandez. It's really the Buck Showalter effect.
Yeah, I mean, Buck has taken this team just to a different level. Like you said, they have the veteran players, and they know how to play in, you know, tough situations. And now you add a guy like Buck that, like we've said before, has probably forgotten more about baseball than you and I will ever know. So he's, I think, proven to be the absolute perfect fit for this team. And now you see the Mets, you know, there was all the doom and gloom that you were talking about. They still have the best record in the National League and the second best record in the major leagues, only behind the Yankees.
Yeah, so no doubt.
Yeah, the Mets, all in all, everything's looking up.
And the only thing that's not is the division finally woke up, right? The Braves have been scorching hot. The Phillies, since firing Girardi, have started to look, you know, alive at least. They've started to win some games. And everybody's kind of watching and going, oh, you know, the Braves have won all these games in a row. They've cut the division lead. As we sit here at Citi Field and do the show, the Mets still have a five-game lead, one of the biggest leads in all of baseball. And I think the most important thing to note is now the Braves, I believe, have been playing really one of the easier schedules recently in baseball. The Mets have been playing a top-five hardest schedule in baseball. That's all about to turn. Something, Joe, you've always talked about since we've been doing Mets content together is beat the teams you're supposed to beat. Beat up on the bad teams. The Mets have done that in the early part of the year. Now they get that chance again in second half of June, early July.
Yeah, and you just tipped the cap to the Braves. I mean, here's the reality. They won 12 games in a row.
Coming off a World Series.
Yeah, coming off a World Series. I mean, it probably was naive if there's anyone that actually believed that the Mets were going to, like, run away with the NL East and they were going to win it by 16 games and it'd be over in late August. The reality is the Braves are defending world champions, and, you know, they found the easy part of their schedule, like you mentioned, and, you know, they went on a good winning streak, and they're eventually going to hit a bit of a harder patch, and the Mets will face the teams that the Braves faced, and if the Mets are certainly as good as we think they are, they're going to beat up on those same teams, and then the biggest thing is they have 15 games left against the Braves. So, honestly, that's probably what's going to determine the winner of the NL East, those 15 games. How you do against the other guys, it's going to be a bit of a win, a little bit of a loss. But how they actually go head-to-head against Atlanta, I think, will be really big.
And let's not forget, in the midst of that, the Mets are doing all this without Jacob deGrom, without Max Scherzer. They just got Tylor McGill back. So the rotation's starting to come into play. We know how good Carrasco has been. You and I are expecting Chris Bassitt to really settle in after a good start and then a little bit of struggles. But he's a pro. He's not really the guy that you worry about on the staff. And, you know, Peterson's been up and down. But I think he's done enough to help them win games. But the one of the reasons this team is winning a lot of games, and you talked about the Mets beating up on the bad teams, this player is beat up on every team in baseball. It's Pete Alonso at this point. And I think the biggest conversation around the Mets' success is, do they have an MVP candidate? And if it's that guy, it has to be Pete at this point. And something you and I have talked about, Joe, is, or that we've pondered at, Pete came up surprisingly as a rookie with the Mets. He wasn't supposed to really be on the roster that year. Instant success. Hits over 50 home runs. He's an instant star. And it's almost that he was so good so early, we forgot this is a young player that isn't in his prime, hasn't seen a ton of big league pitching, is still figuring out not just how to be a slugger and not just how to be an adequate first baseman, but a ball player, a hitter, getting better at defense, taking his walks. Guys are avoiding him. Joe, what have you seen from – you followed Pete since he was, you know, second-round pick out of Florida, a prospect in the Mets farm system that had a lot of success pretty early on, but – we're at the point now where Pete Alonso is not just a good player on the Mets. He's a superstar in this entire league.
Absolutely. His maturity at the plate has grown. Like you said, he's willing to take the walks. He's not selling out for the home runs. He's going to hit them. I mean,
yeah,
he's the polar bear. He's a big guy. If he hits, if he barrels a ball up, it's going to go. He doesn't need to try for it. And I think seeing him go the other way, I think, is a big thing. Because the team started shifting on him. He would pull grounders into the shift. Now he's willing to go the other way. You're seeing a lot more line drives out of him and a little less of like the towering home runs. So he's kind of leveling his swing out a bit. And I think he's just growing. Like you said, he's entering his prime. He's 27 years old. So he's entering his prime years where he's, you know, in theory going to be the best player that he could be. And like you said, it's an MVP candidate. He may win it, may not win it. I mean, you got Paul Goldschmidt. There's other guys in the National League that are playing really good ball. But Pete Alonso, the way he's matured over the last 2 years, I mean, to me, it's a massive development and puts him in position to be one of the best players in baseball, not just a slugger that's going to hit a bunch of homers. He can do everything. I mean, batting average is up over 280 now. So
it's crazy.
He's hitting.
Driving in runs, not just with the home run.
Yeah, he's driving in runs, hitting, he's getting on base. He's turning into the total package as an offensive player. And, you know, defensively, he has his lapses here and there, but all in all, I'd say he's developed as a defensive player, too.
So we brought up driving in runs. Is that something you've seen with him situationally where, you know, the rookie year, he hit a lot of home runs.
Yep.
And he did, of course, drive in a lot of runs. But we always knew in high leverage spots, guys are not only going to pitch you differently, but you're going to see really good relievers, really good starters, and they know how to work around young hitters. It feels like this year, it's the simple things, right? It might be the sack fly. It might be just making contact. I think that, to me, is what stands out with Pete the most. Because, let's be real, as long as Pete Alonso is healthy, he's always going to hit over 30 home runs. It's just who he is.
Yeah, I think the making contact is a team thing.
It's now a theme of this team.
It is a theme of this team, that everyone is putting the ball in play. They're one of the lowest strikeout teams in all of baseball. And Alonso has kind of joined the fray with everyone. He's certainly putting the ball in play more. And then in those RBI situations, you know, with the exception of that Arizona game where, you know, he chased the sliders in the dirt, he's been avoiding that in those situations. So definitely very impressive.
So let me go off script here, something that we've seen a lot, the narrative around the Mets a month ago, and not much has changed. The Mets are still making contact, still driving in runs, still scoring a lot of runs, is that the advanced metrics tell you the Mets might not be hitting the ball hard, or they might be capitalizing on a lot of infield hits, or they're a team that in an era of baseball where everybody's doing the strikeout or the home run, the classic outcomes, the Mets are kind of going against the grain, and there were doubters of this. I'm talking not just last week, I'm talking over a month ago. Do you think that is a sustainable strategy in today's game?
I do. I don't see why not. I think at this point, because how teams are playing with the three true outcomes, defensively they're playing other teams that way. So the Mets are hitting against the shift, which no one
does.
Great point. And they're putting the ball in play. And when you put the ball in play, anything could happen. Guys will boot balls. Guys will drop balls. They'll make bad throws. If you're not putting the ball in play, you're not even leaving the opportunity for things to go your way. And as far as the infield hit goes that you mentioned,
the team can run.
To me, I don't think that's pure luck.
Yep.
I think it's pure hustle. They're putting the ball, and if they hit a little dribbler, They know you bust down the line, and if they take a second to wait to throw, they're beating out. You saw Eduardo Escobar do it. You saw Starling Marte do it. And it is a theme of this team, yeah. Like we just said about the contact. It's an all hustle, all contact. And to me, that's a sustainable model. They're going to keep playing that way. That's sustainable for sure.
Yeah, stealing bases. And let's be real. We for a while, I've wanted this team to get more athletic. If you look just a couple of years ago, they were a classic power team. But running the bases, not only the athleticism side of the game, but the mental side of the game, it was always a little questionable yeah. for the Mets. And now under Buck, Joey Green, like Cora, at third base, the guy has never seen a stop sign in his life. But until it fails, there's no need to criticize it. It's been a huge part of this Mets offense.
There's certainly been a lot of situations where it's worked out, and then you watch the replay, and you're like, I can't believe Joey Cora actually sent him.
Yes.
And then he sent them, and it worked. So the aggressiveness, I think, is a great thing. I'd prefer my third base coach dare the outfielder to make the perfect throw. And if he does, you tip your cap and you say, great job, and you just keep doing it. And you have to set it in motion that it's going to be something you consistently do. You can't just go through spurts of I'm going to aggressively send and then I'm just going to start stopping people. Just has to keep going, and they have the perfect third base coach to do that.
All right, a reminder, you are listening to the Mets Pod. You can subscribe and get the Mets Pod anywhere from Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch on SNY's YouTube. Some of you are right now. And if you are, feel free to send us some questions. We'd love to get them in on today's show or wherever else you get your podcasts. All right, Joe, special episode here. We're at Citi Field. We got a great setup. People have come out to hear the show, see the show. So just really good energy. So I have to bring in some of your best energy, which is talking about Edwin Diaz. There's no other way to do it. You have, call it what it is, you have defended this guy you weren't defending the trade, but Diaz as a player, you have had his back for a long time. We've seen him really get back to the form of being a dominant closer that he was for Seattle, to the point where striking out guys, throwing 102 miles an hour, locating the slider, kind of being the guy that you look at and go, trust Diaz. I have faith in Diaz. When he comes out there, I'm not worried anymore. What have you seen from Diaz that, not even when you were defending him saying he's good, but now, why is he great?
So I'm, of course, the Edwin Diaz stan.
You are the man.
Yeah, the guy. I have no problem saying it.
Yes.
But what I'm seeing from Edwin Diaz is just consistency in his release point. That's the biggest thing. Because his delivery is a little bit of an interesting one where he kind of has that leg and that double leg, which allows your opportunity for your hips to get out of whack. And to me, he's kind of smoothed that out this year. You don't see so much crazy wild control. Like, he'll miss a pitch here and there or whatever, but he's not by any means, all over the place. And guys just don't touch his stuff, man. The slider, he's getting on top of it. So you're not seeing, when he gets under the slider, you would see a kind of airplane helicopter in a little bit. And that's when the guys would hit it, because it would just kind of be sitting on a T form. He's been on top of that slider this year, and you're seeing so much swing and miss on it. And the fastball, like you said, up to 102, he's locating. To me, he's a guy that right now, the only closer that you could justifiably say is better than him in baseball is Josh Hader on Milwaukee.
Who didn't give up a run for like a year.
Who just doesn't give up runs at all. So now that adds to the conversation of Edwin Diaz going forward, because he's one of the guys that's a free agent at the end of the year. Is Mets are going to have a decision to make. Is he someone that needs to be paid?
Let's go there. I think about a month ago, you and I had the question of, the Mets have this fascinating trifecta of free agents, right? And this is very first world problems right now in Mets world. But you and I, we love the offseason. We love talking about the offseason. We know about Chris Bassitt, right? A guy that they traded for and do have a lot of belief in. I think long term, they'd like to get that deal done. Brandon Nimmo, a player we have seen grown here since being a first round pick out of high school and really take off and expand his game, and is the guy in center field. And then Edwin Diaz, traditionally, we are, don't pay relievers or don't buy a bullpen kind of thing. But this is someone who, when he's on, top three closer in the game.
Yeah.
For a baseball team right now that needs to close out a lot of important games, where has Diaz moved in the power rankings of guys they must keep going into the offseason?
I think he has to have, right?
Yeah.
At this point, he has to have jumped up. And
where would they be without him, this bullpen? Because
let's
be real, it's been a little roller coaster so far and injuries.
When Buck made the, in my opinion, smart managerial decision to pitch Diaz in the eighth and then not throw him back out there for the ninth.
Do you like that strategy?
I thought it was
going
perfect
after the tough part of the lineup. that high leverage.
That's a modern day type of thing. So, you know, for everything we said about Buck Showalter when they hired him about would he
raise my hand.
He's
wrong.
Been super adaptable. And I think what they did was perfect. But when you look at Diaz, there's exceptions to every rule.
Yeah.
So in theory, you're not trading top prospects for relievers. Mets still shouldn't have made that trade back then from a process standpoint.
But you still want to get the most out of it.
You still want to get the most out of it, but you typically don't pay closers big money. But there's an exception to every rule, and I think Edwin Diaz has entered into the conversation of being an exception to the rule and not just another power arm that's a little inconsistent. He's now, to me, that dude.
Yeah, and you can't forget how young he was when they traded for him, where it's not a, hey, we traded for him, we had team control. Now he might be on the wrong side getting out of his prime. He's right in his prime, where he's the kind of guy that you want to keep around for the long term. So, all right, Joe, I want to do a schedule look ahead before we get into some brief trade deadline talk. It's not as far away as a lot of people think.
Yeah, it's
of course,
sneaking
up. We're going to close out with the mailbag. But looking ahead at the schedule, is there anything that has your eye as the schedule goes from brutal West Coast trip, obviously some of the best teams in baseball, starting with the Dodgers, being out on the West Coast, it's tough. Is there anything right now that they're back home here at Citi Field that you're looking forward to and going, this is where you're playing 500 baseball, maybe you can get back to being a couple games ahead?
I think now's the time. Milwaukee is coming in reeling. So the Mets, so while Milwaukee's a really good team on paper, certainly like we thought the Angels were, they're reeling very similar to what the Angels were when the Mets started coming to town. And after this, they have the Marlins, so a big divisional matchup. And interestingly, the first time they faced the Marlins all year.
We haven't seen them.
Yeah, we haven't
seen
the Marlins.
We've seen the Nationals and the Phillies 9,000 times. 9,000 times. The Diamondbacks 8,000 times.
Yep. But we haven't seen the Marlins yet, so we see them. You got the Astros twice, so you got the away and then the home there.
Short series, right?
Two-game series each, I believe. So I think it's an opportunity for the Mets to reestablish themselves. And, you know, it starts tonight here against Milwaukee at Citi Field.
All right. So we get questions every week about what are the pieces this team needs to acquire. And we're going to get into the mailbag. I'll actually jump ahead here and sneak one into it as we talk about the trade deadline. Here was a question from Cowboy who said, what do you guys see being the biggest trade piece the Mets will look for, as well as who do you feel will be moved in that said trade from the Mets? Okay. You and I have kind of hammered home bullpen, maybe a DH, not necessarily a J.D. Martinez-level player or a Wilson Contreras-level player. But when you look at this, Joe, we're, in that six-week territory where it might not be in everyday media, might not be an everyday fan discussion as much as it is here, but teams have to be doing their scouting right now and saying, here's a couple holes that we have, and can we acquire it on the cheap?
Oh, no, there's no question that the teams are sending their pro scouts out to other rosters and just see what could be available. And I don't know about specific players, because with the expanded playoffs this year, I think teams are not going to be making the decision to sell until right up against the deadline, because there's going to be more teams in the playoffs.
A lot of teams in flux right now.
A lot of influx. So, but if you want to just talk rather than specific players, more just positions, I think bullpen is obvious. I mean, once you get past Diaz, I think there's question marks on everything else. Lugo's been up and down.
Up and down, yep.
The lefty relief situation's been up and down. Trevor May's coming off the injury, so we're not entirely sure what's going to happen with him when he comes back. So they definitely need to look into some bullpen help. And I would say maybe it's not specifically DH per se, but power. Because while the Mets are doing all the little things right, which I think is great for, you know, obviously, and it's proving out in the record, but they're 18th in the league in home runs. So that number needs to get a little closer to, you know, league average or above. So I would say the top priorities need to be bullpen and then, of course, some power.
All right, so I'll throw the name at you that everybody asks about, and we were talking about off the air, Wilson Contreras, right? It's the factor of he's a catcher. He's a offensive catcher. He's been one of the best offensive catchers in the game for a while now. The Cubs could be year number two in a row of selling off assets. What do you see in that kind of level of a move when the way you explained it to me with the roster crunch and the fact that that just might be a little rich, especially when you look at the amount of pieces this team has sold off last deadline and this offseason from a pretty thin farm system right now?
Yeah, I don't see it as honestly a great fit. Like, I know there's a lot of Met fans that are down on James McCann and Tomas Nito as the catching duo, but with the way the rest of the offense is performing, you need those guys for their defensive side of the ball. And at this point, you're not going to see the Mets just cut James McCann and the rest of – he's got two more years after this on his contract. They're not just You know, they ate the Robinson Cano deal. They're not going to also eat the James McCann deal just to go trade a top prospect for Wilson Contreras. Because that's the thing. He's going to cost a lot. And we need to get to the point where the Mets are building up this farm system. Because to be a sustainable winner, obviously you have Steve Cohen's wallet and the payroll and spending on free agents. That's going to be there. But you have to have prospects coming through the system. And if the Mets are continuously trading first-round picks to get these rentals, like think about the Javier Baez trade last year. It's not
Crow Armstrong having a really nice year right now.
So far, he's doing well. So, I mean, it's just not sound strategy. And of course, Tomas Nito's out of minor league options too. So I don't think they're looking to carry three catchers, at least for an elongated period of time. Maybe it's something that they will do in September. They could call somebody up or whatever. But from the trade market, I don't think catcher should be near the top of their priority, to be honest.
Yeah, I wouldn't hit the panic button just yet. They've actually been able to survive with Nito, Mazika. He takes a lot of criticism, James McCann, but I also think he has the respect of a pitching staff that it's pretty tough to garner respect of those guys. I think that means something here. We're on the topic of catcher. I feel like I can hear the listeners right now screaming, Francisco Alvarez. Joe, I give you a lot of credit. You have taken the hard stance that you said this is a guy that is still working on his defense. I know you've talked to a lot of people within the organization. You've obviously seen him. You've seen a lot of him. You know things are getting better in that regard. It makes more noise when a guy like John Heyman comes out, the kind of respect that he has as an insider, and says, don't completely rule out Alvarez in 2022 yet. Are we still at the point where it's just a little, not only unrealistic, but maybe even dangerous to rush a 20-year-old that, yes, he can hit home run after home run after home run in AA, but this isn't a guy that you're saying, hey, come up and give us a little punch on maybe a World Series run. This is a guy that should be wearing a Met uniform for a decade.
I texted with some people with Binghamton yesterday to just get an update because I had checked in a little while ago, you know, a few weeks back, and they're like, he's a hard worker, and there's no denying Francisco Alvarez's work ethic. He puts in the work. He shows up every day with a game plan, so he's looking at this like a professional, which is a great thing. And they said, yeah, he's making some progress. His pitch framing is something that actually has probably grown the most this year, but it's at the point where they're like, how much could he possibly have improved in like a month?
Yeah,
like,
it's a lot to ask.
You're not going from a guy a month ago that we looked at as, you know, he's got a long way to go as a catcher to now throw him in the big leagues. He's ready to catch Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom and Chris Bassett. There's a lot that you're asking there. And another thing to consider, he is raking in AA. There's no denying that. Maybe the move is to bring him to AAA and get him with some more veteran pitchers on the AAA side and, you know, just see that part of the game. But to me, it's not a move for this year. And, you know, maybe he will get called up and maybe he'll come up and he'll rake and I'll look dumb. But I'm thinking long term with Francisco Alvarez. I think he's a future star for the Mets. I truly do. I think, you know, he's the number one player in our system. And if I were to
one player maybe in minor league baseball,
close, certainly in the conversation at this point. And he's someone that if I had, you know, the opportunity to label a future all-star, he's the best bet in the system.
All right, so to close the book on the Alvarez chapter before, I'm sure we'll have to revisit it again within 2 weeks. Do you think the Mets having this revolving door at DH has even opened that conversation up more for the average fan, right? Because you see Alvarez, you see that 9 home runs in 15 games, and you're like, this guy's 20 years old. Yeah. He's hitting home runs at an absolute insane rate. Do you think that's been part of it as well?
Yeah, I think fans are seeing the highlights. You know, we post them on Twitter and everything, so fans are seeing everything that Alvarez is doing, and it's certainly at the point with minor league.
Yeah, it's content. Your guys' fault. Yeah, you're posting all of his home runs,
it's
getting people
fault.
Excited.
Yeah. But with minor league stuff, more fans are into it now, so everyone's getting excited, and I appreciate the excitement. But the reality of the DH situation is I don't want to call up Francisco Alvarez to be my DH. I'll go trade for one from another team, you know, maybe a Trey Mancini from Baltimore.
Sure.
Like, they're certainly, you know,
a low-cost vetean.
Yeah, a low-cost veteran. Alvarez's bat, you know, just think about Adley Rutschman, who, speaking of Baltimore, they just called him up. He was the number one overall pick. They took him out of college, and he was considered to be, you know, a very advanced hitter. And obviously, defensively behind the plate, he's good as well. He's hitting around 200 in his early stint in the big league. And, you know, he's going to figure it out. But what Alvarez is doing to AA pitching doesn't necessarily correlate to what would happen if he were to be facing Adrian Hauser tonight.
And I mean, I think on top of that, the fact is he's going to a first place team. So there are expectations. You can't just come up and figure it out. Be the guy. You have to contribute. Because let's be real, everybody in this Mets lineup so far this year has contributed in some kind of way, even the guys on the bench every night. So I think that matters a lot. All right, let's get to the mailbag. Special mailbag edition, our first mailbag ever here at Citi Field. As always, the questions roll in. Prospect-related questions very often. So I'll bundle the first two before I throw them at you, Joe. This one's from Nathan Hirsch, who said, which prospects are absolutely untouchable at this point? And the one bundled with Eric Briggs' question, on a level of 1 to 10, how much of a prospect hugger are you guys? Joe gets labeled as that quite often. Oh. He said, how much of the system would you be able to stomach shipping out in August if it meant to be in a better position in October of this year?
So I don't believe in the word untouchable.
Okay, I think everybody's got a price.
Everybody's got a price.
Well, Jared Kelenic had a price, so it might be true.
Everyone has a price, but it'd be very difficult to convince me to trade Francisco Alvarez or Brett Beatty. Below that, depending on the return, I think you could convince me. As far as prospect hug or 1 to 10, I mean, I'm not going to lie. There's no reason to do that. I'm like a 9. I don't want to trade prospects. It's what I do.
It's what you do.
Yeah, it's what I do.
It takes away from your wealth.
Right.
Less to talk about. Yeah. I get it.
It takes away from what I'm doing, but I also understand the Mets are in a win-now situation, and if you want to win, you do have to part with something. I look at it as what the Braves did at the trade deadline last year. It's kind of what I want to see the Mets do this year. You don't need to go make a big splash. I know that, I mean, that excites the fan base, that excites, you know, the radio callers and the headlines for the newspapers and websites and everything. Like, that's great and all, but I think the Mets need to be hanging on to their top guys if they can. Go get this year's Eddie Rosario, this year's Jorge Soler, this year's Richard Rodriguez. You go get those guys. I think if you're doing that, I think that puts you in a good position, because you're building around a core of Jacob DeGrom coming back, Max Scherzer coming back, the offense with Pete Alonso, Starling Marte, Jeff McNeil, Francisco Lindor.
They don't need a superhero to come in here.
Exactly.
And that's how Javi Baez was looked at last year.
He was, when they got Baez, it was like expected that he was going to come and make a significant impact, significant difference to what's going on with the roster. I don't think the Mets need something significant. I think they just need pieces around the edge, like we said, add to the power, add to the bullpen, and save some of those top prospects for off-season trades where maybe more substantial names with contractual control actually become available.
And it gives you a little more flexibility, right? If you know, if you extend Nimmo and Diaz, but Bassett had to go, well, you might need one of those guys for a starting pitcher again for like year number 4 in a row of that. It happens. It's flexibility. So and let's not forget, as Joe will be covering very extensively, it's a big draft for the Mets. Multiple extra picks. It's going to hopefully, expectedly, replenish the farm system. And that might, at the end of the day, make some guys expendable, which is a good transition here from Dougie Clyde's asking in the mailbag. Right now, I'm thinking Alvarez, Beatty, and Ramirez are untouchable. Though anything can happen, would love to hear you unpack this theory. I could see Mauricio and Vientos moved.
So I find it interesting lumping Ramirez in. And
that's a new one.
Yeah, that is a new one. And he's been great for low A St. Lucie. He's repeated the level this year. You really see his game kind of coming together. And he's a guy that, if you want to estimate the best odds of a major leaguer, a prospect in the major leagues to represent all 5 tools in this system, it's Alex Ramirez. You know, we'll see kind of how he all develops. But as far as Mauricio and Vientos, like, what are we talking about moving here? Like, are we getting, like, the Mets?
Not a seventh inning, man.
Right. The Mets need to be getting somebody with contractual control and high-level impact to be trading two guys that are top 100 prospects in baseball. Like, they need to get, like I said just a minute ago, they need to get out of the thought process of winning right this second takes priority over winning next year and the year after that and the year after that. Billy Epler said that, actually, when he got hired on his press conference. He said, look, we're going to be trying to win every single year, but we're not going to sacrifice winning 2 years from now just to win right now. So they have to be careful in what they do, I think, is probably the best way to phrase it.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to get caught up in, you know, right now, let's be real. We're assuming that Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty are going to be locks to be a part of this team for a long time. Things go wrong sometimes. Sometimes a guy that you think is going to be great, it just doesn't work out that way. So it's nice to have the depth. It's nice to have guys behind them and it's crazy to say that about Mauricio or Vientos, but could be insurance and could go differently than you expect. I mean, look at Pete Alonso. He was a second-round pick. Right. Nobody expected Pete to be this level of superstar. And I know you've seen that a lot in the farm system here for a long time.
Yeah, Jeff McNeil's another example. And, obviously Jacob deGrom's the prime example, right? You look at a guy, you look at a guy like Beatty, like hypothetically he doesn't work out. You have Mark Vientos, who's also a third baseman. Roddy Mauricio, he's currently a shortstop, so the theory is, well, Francisco Lindor's under contract for 10 years. Roddy Mauricio doesn't have a spot here. In spring training, the Mets gave Mauricio some reps at second base. They gave him some reps in the outfield. So
DH spot is
That to me, that has Mark Vientos' name written all over
it. He's kind of a player without a clear-cut position, I'd say.
But Mauricio, he's a good athlete. I think if you were to take him out of center, shortstop, put him in center field or even a corner, I think it's something he could do.
All right. So one update we did get today. We got a lot of injury updates today. Yeah. You know, Jankowski working his way back. Scherzer back with the team. But, of course, we have to talk about Jacob deGrom. I think that's always going to be a theme as long as Jacob deGrom is not healthy in uniform for the Mets right now. It sounds like he's been throwing. Yep. I think the next big one is facing live hitters.
Yep.
Joe, you've been very cautious since the deGrom injury. Before really any news came out, don't set expectations when he's going to return. Where should the expectations be right now for Jake, especially when you look at a team that, sure, the lead's not 12 games anymore, it's five, but at the same time, they're not staring up at it, falling behind 10 games. They're not rushing DeGrom back. Just doesn't make a lot of sense, I think.
There's no reason.
Despite how much good news we get.
Yeah. The good news is great. Good news is better than bad news.
Yes.
So,
or no news, which is usually bad news.
Right. So he's making progress, clearly. He's throwing bullpen sessions. I know, like you said, he's going to be going to live hitters soon, and he wants to do some ups and downs, which is obviously very important. But, yeah, there's no rush. And I always go back to when he first kind of went on the IL. Buck Showalter in a press conference just kind of subtly was like, yeah, if we get Jake back by the All-Star break, that'd be good. I remember hearing that and going, All-Star break?
I felt like forever away.
Yeah, I was like, All-Star, like that's forever. And obviously, we're getting closer and closer to the All-Star break, and I still think it's a realistic target. Like, maybe it's just after the All-Star break. I think we're at the point where Max Scherzer's probably a little ahead of DeGrom, and maybe he's an early July comeback, and DeGrom's a mid-July comeback, but they have a lead in the division. They have the best record in the National League. Let's just get Jacob deGrom to be 110%. So when he comes back, he's the Jacob deGrom that they need. Because without Jacob deGrom being Jacob deGrom, the Mets' World Series hopes probably are not as strong as obviously without him.
Yeah, I think what makes this team special, or what's expected to make this team special, is that DeGrom and Scherzer are your game one and two in every single playoff series. And that's a threat that we haven't seen something like that in baseball in a long time. It's just absolutely insane. Speaking of that, let's talk about the number three guy. So he's pitching here tonight. Chris Bassitt, really good star in a New York Met uniform, has been open. This has been one of the hardest parts of his career. He hasn't really gone through something like this in his time in the big leagues. Is there anything you're seeing with Bassitt, Joe, or do you think it's just a matter of, you know, he's a guy that four or five pitch pitcher, throws a lot of different speeds. Sometimes you just don't have it when you're that kind of guy, and you can't go back to just overpowering people. Is it that simple with Bassitt?
What I'm seeing really is he's just missing with his location on his pitches. And often when you think about he's missing with location, you're thinking he's just throwing a bunch of balls and walking hitters. But it's mostly he's actually his curveball's hanging and getting hit. His fastball is up and getting hit. When Bassitt's at his best, he's able to go up, down on the fastball, adjust the hitter's eye level, and that's kind of what you were seeing early on this season. And over the last couple starts, it just hasn't been there for him. So the consistency's not there, but like with everything else, it's a very long season. You're going to have good stretches. You're going to have bad stretches, and Bassitt is a good pitcher. He's not a Jacob deGrom, a Max Scherzer, where it's like every time out you're expecting utter pure dominance, but you certainly want to see some more consistency out of him, and I expect that to start tonight. He gets back home, gets back to this nice weather here.
Looks comfortable here.
Yeah, he seems like he's comfortable here, and facing a Milwaukee team, like I mentioned, is reeling a bit, so I think tonight is the night that Chris Bassitt turns it around a bit.
All right, before we get out of here, and of course get ready to go to the game, All-Star voting officially launched right now. The Mets, first place team. Over the years recently, the Mets haven't been a club that have sent a large amount of All-Stars to the game. Is it a little bit different this year? Pete Alonso is going to be there.
Yeah.
Has to be there. I think we've really planted our Jeff McNeil flag for a long, long time. are you looking at somebody like McNeil, or is there anybody else on the roster that you think is representing this team?
The biggest question about Alonso is going to be, is he going for a three-peat in the home run derby? Because he's going to be at the All-Star game. So now it's a matter of, is he going to do the home run derby and go for three in a row?
I think he said he will do it as long as he's an All-Star. He wouldn't have just done the derby as a standalone. So he's going to have to live up to his words now.
Yeah, looks
he's got a title to defend. Two-time.
Yeah, looks like going for a three-peat here. Honestly, the second most likely is Edwin Diaz, in my opinion.
That's right.
Yeah, he's been obviously utterly dominant. We talked about him just a little bit ago.
Him and Hader are the two relievers in the NL, right?
For sure. And then Jeff McNeil's probably the next one on the list. I mean, like we've talked about on last week's show, the best pure hitter on the team.
Yep.
And
I think play anywhere at a high rate.
Second, left, right, at third, wherever they want to put him. I think that's it, honestly. I think Nimmo's been good, but then he was hurt for a little bit. Bassett's been up and down.
Marte hasn't been able to fully get going.
Yeah,
he's been good.
Marte's been good, but not full-blown Starling Marte. He'll get there, I think, but at this point, it's probably too late for him to make up for an all-star spot. So I think you're looking at Alonso and Diaz as kind of the quote-unquote locks, and then McNeil kind of on the outside looking in who could potentially make it.
Any surprise, guys? Anybody that you could see as an alternate, or do you think the rotation's just been too hurt? And the fact, you know, Lindor obviously had a really hot start, went cold, got hot again, has gone a little cold again, just two up and down. Because realistically...
Yeah. Lindor would be, the wild card.
Tatis hasn't played this
Tatis
year.
Tatis hasn't
opens
played.
Up shortstop.
So shortstop hasn't been as strong in the National League this year. And from a WAR perspective, Lindor's still up there amongst NL shortstops. So he's had the ups and downs like you mentioned. But if he's able to start turning it on here over the next 3 weeks, I think you're looking at him as potentially that fourth option that could make the All-Star team.
All right, what is Joe DiMaio looking forward to most getting into the park?
Oh, man.
Folks, if you don't know, he's a classic, just a hot dog guy. Yeah. There's nothing fancy about this guy in the ballpark right now.
Not only is it just a hot dog, it's hot dog with ketchup.
I'm the same way. Yeah. We're children.
Yeah, we're children. I'm okay with it. Yeah. But hot dog, ketchup, maybe I'll have a beer in there or something. But
you're getting crazy now.
I might. But it's a beautiful day.
Perfect day at City Field.
Perfect day for baseball, and just excited to see, you know, Chris Bassett here. I think the bounce back starts today, and just really excited to get going, man. It was really fun to do this.
This has been awesome. A reminder, everyone, subscribe to the Mets Pod wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch on SNY's YouTube, obviously on the social platforms as well. We have all our clips. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll catch you next week.